Okay, this is Christina Scheppelmann. She is, she's been the director of artistic operations at the Washington National Opera since 2002. And together with the general director, Placido Domingo, she plans and prepares all artistic aspects at the WNO and has also helped advance their reputation as a world-class opera company. And prior to moving to Washington, she's worked at respected opera houses in Barcelona and Venice and as the artistic administrator at the San Francisco Opera. So she's going to talk today about Guillermo Cuica's seating plans.
It might seem a little strange for me to talk about paintings or a visual artist, but Cuica has worked in the theater, as you probably know. I mean, he's done set designs for theater productions, and he must have, I mean, I've looked at that carefully, and he must obviously have some fascination with the theater or with his experiences in the theater. I actually love what he did, and to me it looks like either a visual memory that he had from an experience in the theater or even a sound experience. But let me just talk for a moment about the shape of theater, because I'm sure many of you have been to theaters but probably haven't thought about how a theater looks. When you look at a shape like this, which any shape influences the acoustics, of course, and acoustics and sound goes in certain direction, bounces in certain directions, and creates different sound patterns that I feel are sort of visualized here. If you look at a theater like this, it's more of a 19th, 18th century theater. They're mainly made for the audience to look at each other more than on the stage. And the sound also does not expand the same way it does expand in modern theater. So you have basically a small opening, the stage is only here, then you have this big horseshoe, which is really made for people to see each other. Traditionally, the cheap seats were in the orchestra. People would be standing there. And the sound was never the best in the orchestra. Still today, I sustain, don't ever sit in the orchestra seats. The sound is going to go right over your head. So that is one very old-fashioned shape. Then when you move further into the 19th century, which I think somewhere was Covent Garden here, the space actually opens up. And you have a bigger stage, and the whole visual and sound concentration is different. You're not there to look at each other and talk to each other. You're actually there to look at the stage, for the sound to come to you, to fill the auditorium, and to make cross connections within the auditorium. And so the opening of the stage opens. And this, for example, is a modern auditorium, which is very wide. There's no importance anymore of looking at each other. It's all focused on the stage. And when you come down here at the very end, this, and I can identify a few of those, and I recognize some of those floor plans, but this, for example, is La Scala di Milano, which was built in 1776, I believe, if I'm not totally wrong. And it still maintains this round, though it has an incredible sound, and we try to, with physical, with really making a science out of sound, but in the 18th century, they actually got it right most of the time. The horseshoe here is not as rounded as some of the small places, and the sound really expands into the entire theater. And when I look at this, I feel, that Cuica must really love the theater. He must have loved his experiences in the theater. And some must be a memory of what he experienced. This looks like sound and visual expansion. The visual part, of course, is here. So the focus always is, I'm looking this direction. But he seems to have taken the auditorium as the focus, and the sound and the visual that goes out into the auditorium. The sound bends as it goes. Sound also kind of explodes sometimes, which I love in that other work he has around the corner. We can go in a moment. Because some of these, I feel, is really the explosion of music. The sound going into the theater and giving a certain feeling as you sit in there of strong, bombastic, explosive sounds, because depending what you hear, if you hear big pieces with 80 musicians, the experience you have in the house is different than when you have 25 musicians. You will have a physical experience sitting in there that is truly impacts you and can actually vibrate within you as it vibrates within the theater. And I feel that that physical experience and the vibration of sound is in all of them. And they're clearly opera houses. They're not straight theaters. They're not prosa. They're really musical houses built for music that has a much more explosive and bigger sound and makes for a physical experience. When you go to a theater and it's spoken word, it will never have the impact as singing and a big orchestra. And I'm fascinated what he must have felt here. It looks a bit as if he woke up the next day and was recreating the feelings that he had of this music and of this physical experience being in the theater. Those mainly, to me, are the experience of music or the feeling that he experienced from the music and the singing. I love the one when we can go for a moment around the corner. This one over here, the red on black, which to me, by the way, looks either like the Colón in Buenos Aires or the Liceo in Barcelona, which are also sort of horseshoe theaters, late 19th century, but very tall. That to me looks like the explosion of applause. That is the house coming down in this. If you've ever been in the theater where the audience at the end really explodes, that I think is a visualization of that feeling. It's an incredible feeling when you're in the middle of it. It actually, to me, grabs me really in the stomach when you see an entire house just exploding in excitement and applause. And that looks like just that. And it's also a physical experience. And if you think about it later, it can actually create visual images of that house coming down, of this great, fascinating applause that a mass of 2,000 people creates. I wished I could actually ask him what his experiences with opera were, because it clearly must be something very powerful to him in order to create those images. Over there, the black and white at the end, in a way, is much more subtle. We can just go over there. But all of it, in my opinion, is the visualization of sound and of the feeling that the sound creates in you. I mean, that's when you go too close, I feel it loses the effect, but that vibration of the space, it's what really music does. Music is a vibration. I mean, a string instrument vibrates and creates a sound because it vibrates. That is the vibration that creates a reaction in us. I mean, obviously I love music, otherwise I wouldn't say all this. But I love the effect of music, and I love the physical impact that it has. And to put it like this, I've never seen anything like this, and I feel he's so much captured what the feeling of sound and music and space within a theater. My favorite actually are the little ones we were first, because I feel that it has all those different theaters where the sound runs in different ways, and the colors, I admit I know some of the theaters, and the colors and the way he expanded it visually really reflects the feeling in those theaters. Some are smaller, so the explosion is in a smaller space but very powerful, so it creates this detailed little feeling, because you cannot have this huge feeling of a big house. And then you have the bigger houses where the feeling is much more generous. And to me, the favorite one, I said, is over there, where you have the house just coming down in this huge motion, because there's really motion in those images also. And music is also motion. Music moves. You cannot stop music. You can stop a painting. You can look at it and contemplate it. If you want to do this with music, you basically have to replay it over and over again. So the dynamic of the music, the movement going forward, it cannot go backwards. You cannot just play it backwards. Well, you can, but I wouldn't recommend it. It is really in those images. There's always an expansion in the music and the movement forward. And I'm fascinated, actually, how he gave this impression that to me really makes an impact and resonates, because I think I've had those emotions being in the theater, and it's just nice to be able to sit and look at these paintings and sort of try to think of the emotion that usually is fleeting and goes away, and you kind of look at it and you try to remember a musical moment in the theater and go, I think that's how it felt. And I've never thought about it that way as often as I've been going to opera for, I think, about 30 years. And I'm actually grateful to have been asked to speak a little bit about this, because it forced me to really rethink my feelings in those situations and try to imagine back moments in the theater like that. Who of you goes to the theater? Who of you goes to the opera on occasion? If you're not, that's fine. It's not a test. I'm not. Have you ever felt those type of emotions? Or do you feel that this kind of reflects a little bit what you have experienced? Or do you go and just contemplate and don't get involved? I mean, do you ever had physical, this kind of vibration and this impact of music on you? Or yes, ma'am. I mean, if you have any questions, please ask. I really don't. I don't pretend to be an art expert, which I'm not. I've been in the music business for 25 years, and I've been in theater for about 30 years. So these are what I can tell you are impressions from a theater person that looks at that and goes, that is how it feels. That is visualizing how it sometimes feels to sit in a theater.
Your comments about the music expanding and explosions, it certainly is evident here in that it looks like graphite, that he's used as blurs.
Yeah.
And in the smaller paintings that we saw before, each one of those watercolors sort of bled and faded out.
Yeah.
And so it sort of gives the same illusion as you're saying, that it's moving and, you know, it's not static, and it's vibrating and all of the same things you said about the music.
And it bounces. Yeah, and it's fascinating because it really bounces. Those twisted images of the theaters over there, the small ones, it's the sound also bouncing. Sound is not, it's directional. Yes, I mean, if I shout from here to there, it is directional, but it'll come back, it'll bounce off the walls. It creates a dynamic of its own that you cannot, as much as modern theater architects try, you cannot exactly predict it. I mean, the best new concert halls today, they're being built with great research, and they think it's going to be a great acoustic, and sometimes it completely does not work. And that's, I think, so fascinating. And when you look at the old theaters of 19th and 18th century, for some reason they got it right, and it has to do also with material, with untreated wood, with it's not chemically treated, not fireproof, not whatever. I say this because I lived through a fire when I worked in Barcelona. I was there when it burned down. And I guarantee you that the theater doesn't sound the same afterwards. So the science of the non-science, or what they knew at the time, is so fascinating, the way it actually works within a theater. It fills the room, it comes back, it goes to every corner, and that subtle vibration, I feel it's more subtle than some of the more extreme images there, to me feels more like an intense Mozart or a Rossini, where there's a little vibration and little notes, and it makes the whole room kind of float and vibrate in a beautiful way, unlike Wagner or Strauss that is bold and big and loud and just really punches you in the stomach. And I I really wished I could ask him about his experiences, because he apparently has done theater design, but theater is very different of the musical impact, and something must have fascinated him. And what I also find interesting is that he only looks at the auditorium. He does not look at the impact of sound on the stage. It is always seen from the stage into the house, because sound also has also goes into the stage, of course, but he ignores this completely. The fact is actually that sound goes on this, of course, the orchestra is down to these days down in an orchestra pit, the singers are up on the stage, they sing out into your direction if you're in the auditorium, so the sound is really planned to fill the auditorium. It only fills the very front part of the stage. It never really goes very far, which is an interesting aspect of the sound. The singers on stage today can act and go far deep onto the stage, because we have sound monitors on the stage to blast the sound onto the stage, so that when they're very far away from the orchestra, that they can still hear and sing. Otherwise, they would never be together. Which, of course, in the 19th, 18th century wasn't the case. So that's why you had what was called stand and sing. They would be just in the front and sing in the very front and really not act, because they couldn't. They would have had to stop singing because they can't hear the orchestra. And that's an aspect that he doesn't look at it all. He really just looks into the auditorium, which I find beautiful. And I actually would like to know which theater he had in mind over there. If you can find out, I'd be just curious. Any more questions? Yes, ma'am. I would think so.
Plus, he was very personable, but he made a comment about, in effect, we the viewer are in the position of the actor.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Absolutely. Yes.
So that was interesting.
Yes.
The other thing is that opera so much now is using video, and video by modern contemporary artists like Bill Viola and a few others.
Yes.
In the background, I saw Faust, for instance, with this incredible
yes.
video background.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. These almost are pre-video. So it's
yes.
almost a coming together, a merging of two different arts.
Yeah, I mean, this is very pure in its intention. It's really the pure intention of as from the viewer into the auditorium and the effect of the music, without any technology, without any projections, without anything. It's a very pure vision, I think, and very, very honest also, I believe. Yes, we do use more projections in opera, but... it's also a myth that it's less expensive than sets, physical sets. Yes. Absolutely. No, no. And it creates fabulous effects, actually. No, we often don't think about it. We go to the theater, we go to the opera, to a concert, and you know, we look at it, we love the music, it's a piece we probably know, and we enjoy it. But it really does have a physical impact on us. It resonates in our bodies, it makes an impression, it really makes an imprint in us. If we really think about it, if we think back at performances that we really enjoyed, it leaves an imprint in us, an image that might not be exactly what we saw, but it's an image that is filtered through our feelings and through our thinking, and it will stay with us. And in a way, we, at least the crazy ones that go very often back or that are forced to go back because they work with it, we keep going back because we want to recreate this feeling. And, you know, out of 100 performances, one gives you that excitement. And that's the one that you go back for. And it's a very unique, fascinating experience that will stay with you. I guess it's like the hole-in-one on the golf course. Any more questions? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Because there are no people in the audience, Mm-hmm. And what you were saying just now, it made me think of when we were talking before, was that it's more like a memory of what mm-hmm. happened as opposed to
yeah.
this actual event. So that you're reliving what went on. You know, like sort of you're thinking back to what happened.
Yeah.
So that for me, having you explain this and having these sort of empty theaters, it
yeah.
kind of makes more sense to me,
mm-hmm.
just at the general level,
yeah.
why somebody would do this, because maybe they are thinking that.
Yeah. I mean, I believe there are definitely memories and impressions of what it was, and if you look back, you think of the theater and often you think of it empty because you want to be the only one. Because the real personal, emotional experiences of music, they're very personal, they're very intimate. So ideally, I believe we really want to be alone in the theater and be able to feel this emotion, feel that emotion of being punched in the stomach or being able to cry and love without anybody else seeing you, because it is very intimate what music evokes emotion-wise. So I think the empty theaters are indeed that feeling of remembering and remembering being the only one, remembering your emotion in that space alone, which in a way is the ideal world. We cannot do performance for one person alone, but you know, we if you can think it see it that way the day after, it's a great feeling actually. Yes, sir.
You were also talking about the horseshoe shape of early theater opening up. Can you talk about sort of the social changes and the changes in perception?
Sure.
Theaters
at the time in Europe were created by a court, by a king, by a baron, by whoever. It was a court. It had a center box where the king or the count or whoever sat, and it was at the box level. It never was at the lower level. It was one level up, center box, best seat, best view. Everybody wanted to see the king also, of course, so the horseshoe shape helped being able to look that direction where the center box was, because you wanted to see what's going on there. You wanted to be able to say, oh, I saw him, oh, I saw the princess, or whatever. And you wanted to be able to share this. So actually, at the time, people talked, ate, drank during the performance. The performance was a side product. It was like having the television running as you're having dinner, basically. And people were standing on the floor like we do now, and instead of having seats in the orchestra, they stood there and they looked around, sometimes on the stage, sometimes around, okay, which nobility is today here, who did come, who didn't come, and that made for appropriate gossip also. The orchestra was at the same level, which was problematic. The orchestra originally also, they were not seated, they also would be standing. And then this slowly changed, of course, with time. I mean, especially Wagner changed that very drastically by building an opera house where you can't even see the orchestra and you had to look at the stage. The seats were uncomfortable and you were forced to look at the stage. So the shape of the theater changed with the society. It really adapted to how society viewed entertainment. It became from a social place where you went to gossip and see and be seen to a place where you would actually see a performance and comment later on the performance. The eating and drinking continued all through the 19th century. That didn't stop. Actually, I have to admit that in Barcelona, I was able... At the time I was smoking cigarillos, I was able to sit with my boss in the little room in front of the box. We would drink champagne, smoke, and the door to the auditorium was open so we would still be able to hear. Because we went to each performance, so it's not, you know, when you go to each show, I think you can sometimes just listen with half an ear. But that what was traditionally happening in opera houses all the time. It was entertainment, like we eat popcorn in the movie theaters today. It slowly changed as the pieces became more demanding. The orchestra had to have much higher skills. The singer had much higher skills. The singer became the focal point of the excitement. The big divas of the times of Rossini and Donizetti that wrote wonderful pieces for those sopranos, or in the 18th century for countertenors, and those were the big stars, the pop stars of the time. So with time, people really wanted to hear them and see them and then talk about them afterwards. So the space slowly opened up. The stage became more important. There were seats down in the orchestra. The orchestra went down into a pit at a lower level so that you could actually look over the orchestra when you were seated, look and see the stage instead of being seated and just look at, you know, at the orchestra, because they were at the same level like the orchestra seats. And so it slowly evolved, I think, also with the difficulty and the quality of the operas written. The pieces were more demanding, and so they demanded certain attention, to the point where today, when you buy a ticket, your expectation today is to be able to see and hear. And so the auditoriums adapted to that too. I mean, if you go in Europe to an opera house and you are in a box and you're in the deep part of the box, there's no way in hell you can see anything. You have to stand up, kind of twist your neck, and if you're lucky, you see a little bit of the stage, because the back part of the box was not made to see. It was made to eat and drink and whatever else, but not to see the stage. Today, you get very angry. It's mostly actually the American patron that comes to Europe that gets sometimes a little angry when they buy a cheaper seat and they can't see. When you buy a cheap seat at the Met or at the opera here at the Kennedy Center Opera House, or in most more modern opera houses, you can see also from the cheap seats, and you have this expectation. And you should, I think. But it's not everywhere so. But the modern auditoriums and also symphony halls have completely changed. They're really there for you to hear and see as good as possible and to listen. Personally, I don't subscribe to the idea that you have to sit there as if it were a church service and never say a peep. I think if you're really excited, applaud. If you really think this was fabulous, what you just saw, turn to your neighbor and say, gosh, wasn't this great? I mean, I think that the dynamic and many singers that I've talked to and that I've answered this type of to this type of topic to an audience have said we need that feeling from the audience. We need the dynamic. We feed off of the audience. So if you sit there quiet and bored and don't react, that's not good either. I don't want to go back to be drinking and eating during a performance, but there should be life in the auditorium too. It gives the stage the vibration that they need to keep the auditorium vibrating. Any more questions, or should we? Oh, well. Otherwise, I'd like to wrap it up. Thank you very much for listening, and maybe I'll see you here again or at the opera. Thank you.